everybody, and welcome to the world's favorite youth baseball podcast, Clearing the Bases, featuring Coach Jimmy Filangieri. I'm David Friedman, and I want to thank you for coming along this ride with us. How are we doing today, Coach?
Doing good today, Dave. You know, the season is going. We're making some progress after a, we'll call it a slow start, but things are looking good, and I'm feeling good about the team.
Oh, good. Good to hear. Yeah, we are 2-3 weeks in on our JV season at this point. I think you've played quite a bit more games than we have. We have more weather issues. Our home field is just awful in terms of water retention, or I guess it's great in terms of water retention. So it makes it a little tough to play. So for some reason, the way our schedule worked out, we had 80% home games scheduled in the first 3 weeks. So,
wow.
It's been a little rough. We're getting into the groove now. Unfortunately, we also have a bunch of makeup. So we're going to be doing a minimum of three, but I think basically four games a week for the rest of the season at this point.
Yeah. We're pretty much in the same boat, you know, four games a week, not much time for practice, but I'm seeing the progress in the way the boys are playing, you know, that they're more engaged. They're more in tune to what's going on around them. So in a way that's good, but not having the practice to work on things that I see that we need to work on is a little bit of a detriment. So it's kind of a win-lose type thing, I guess.
Yeah, I think it becomes from my perspective, I've been seeing is a little bit of those kids that are more talented from the reps that they're getting in the game, they're able to kind of smooth themselves out a little more than the kids that need the more work and still need to kind of go back to basics. We just don't have the opportunity to do that at this stage with the game schedule.
Right. And this year, a little bit different than what I've had in the past, where we started off really, really poorly, we'll say. And it's one of those things where I always look at it as a coach is, what am I doing wrong? Why is this happening? This has to be something that I'm doing. And I do a lot of self-reflection. And I think this year it seems that, like I said, you know, we started out poorly, but we had enough practice time before, you know, this period that we're running into now, where I was able to change directions with the team, focus on really going back to the very basic things in baseball, which I've never had to do at this level before, but it's kind of a trend. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, that we're getting players that are high school freshmen, high school sophomores, that there's many, many things that I believe they should know, but they don't.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, and as far as our two situations, a little bit different. While we're coaching technically at the same level of JV, because of the way our school setup is and the number of kids that are coming out for the team and whatnot, we're a drastically younger team than you are. So, you know, half of my team is actually from the junior high. So we're seeing, I would say I'm probably seeing a worse step from you, because at least a lot of your kids are generally going to be 1 to 2 years older. So at least they've had more opportunity to get that stuff. Now, that doesn't minimize the fact that when you're looking at you're looking at 10th and some 9th graders, whereas we're looking at 9th and a bunch of 8th graders generally. Yes, the same core issue is there, just in both. And it's not just, I would even argue that it's not so much the physical aspect of it, it's the mental aspect of it, but how that relates to the physical part. So in other words, you know, kids squaring up in front of a ground ball instead of olaying it off to the side, while at first glance, that's a physical issue. To me, it's a mental issue of not taking that extra, not thinking I need to take that extra step. Or the bigger thing, and you know, I played a ton of outfield, so I take pride in trying to teach outfield to the kids. Nobody, day one of practice, no kid used two hands to catch a fly ball.
Right.
And I'm going, I I don't understand, to the point where, and I know I'm rattling on a little bit here, but it was only, so we're, you know, whatever, a month plus in between tryouts and practices and whatnot, forget about even over the winter stuff, where the other day at practice, we reset. We told the kids, listen, we're going back to day one. You were all, you all had to have been taught this when you were 8 or 9 or earlier. You know, at this point, kids are starting in 4 or 5, whatever, for whatever stupid reason, my own personal opinion. But, you know, at 8 or 9, you had to be taught, get underneath the ball, get behind the ball, get underneath it, use 2 hands to catch it, use your momentum moving forward as you catch it so you can throw the ball. And zero of my kids were doing that. And so we drilled it in practice, and we drilled it. And like, after the practice, like, I'm sure this wasn't the most fun practice you guys have had, but this is what we need to do. We can't have routine outs not be outs. We don't have pitchers that are throwing 90. You know, right. we have to pitch to contact, and we have to be able to do something with that contact.
Yeah. See, I would say that you're probably in a little bit better situation than I am, because the players are younger. So my sophomores, I'll never see them again. That's it. I have them for this 3-month period, and there's no way that I'm going to fix anything mechanical. That's for sure. That's just not going to happen. So, and you know me, that I'm very big on the mental approach. So I have to spend most of my time working on those approaches, you know, defensively, offensively, on the mound, and just working on the mental side. But getting back to what you were saying, you know, if you get a kid as an 8th grader, well, there's potential that you could have him for 3 years. So he's already going to know your culture, your philosophy. He's going to know that. I'm in a little bit of a different situation, and I'll use as an example. This year I have 4 freshmen, and last year I had 4 freshmen. So again, I'm only going to see those 4 players again next year. But I will tell you this, the 4 players that are sophomores now that I had as freshmen last year, they play the game totally different than, you know, the other 15 kids that I have. And it's because I had that time, maybe. And I mean, I'm making a big assumption that that's the reason, is because I had them last year and they already know what I expect.
Oh, that's got to be a big, I mean, that's has to be a big part of it. I know you don't like to toot your own horn and whatnot, but, and that doesn't make you the greatest coach in the world, but it does make you, you know, you're looking for that consistency and having the same message multiple years. Whereas up to this point, they could have been on a different team with a different coach in town ball. They could have switched travel, you know, what these kids do, a lot of them, they're switching travel ball teams every year because of one reason or another. So they're getting all these different voices. So it could be the first time in their career, you know, other than dad, who may or may not be a good coach, that they're getting a consistent message from 1 year to the next.
Yeah. And then also, I don't know whether we've talked about this before or not, but I really believe that what's happening, it's through the years. This is not just this year, but I kind of see it happening year after year after year, is that one of the biggest problems is that the players are not being held accountable for their actions. So what I mean by that is, you know, you're playing on a travel team. You're maybe one of the better kids on your travel team. So the coach looks at it like, well, we got to win. So if little Johnny does something that he shouldn't be doing, well, I'm going to overlook that because I can't put him on the bench because I have to win. And I'm starting to see that that's what's hurting a lot, because a lot of kids, when I correct them, they look at me like I'm nuts. And I believe that the only way that they're really going to understand what you're trying to get through to them is there has to be some type of consequence when you do something wrong. And when I say you do something wrong, I'm not talking about an error or a strikeout or anything like that. I'm talking about if you miss a sign. I'm talking about if you get a base hit and you don't think two out of the box, those type of thing. And I will sit you on the bench. I don't care if you're my best player, my number 4 hitter that's batting 600. You're going to sit because you need to learn. And I think that what I'm seeing a lot of is that's not happening at the in travel. And I'm not saying all of the travel. I'm saying a good portion of it.
Sure. Sure. And we absolutely see the same thing. And it's something that we battle with as coaches on my team. And again, I've said this before, I'm not the head coach, so I'm not the final say on this stuff. Although we do, I have a great relationship with my head coach where we do confer on 80% of the things that we do probably. But it's with the travel thing, is a multiple faceted. One is that, okay, we're just playing to win. Pure and simple, we're playing to win. So got to have those kids in the lineup. And two, if I do start sitting this kid because of those types of things, and it could be even going even further, it could be missing, missed practice this week because they were doing this or that, and had to miss this game because they were at a different game and a different team, whatever. But those coaches, a lot of times, are afraid to sit them because then the kid won't come back to them the next year because it's so easy to just jump ship. And most coaches will just take anybody on their team if they have, a lot of coaches taking kids without talent, but even if they're a very talented kid, they're going to find another home. Like, oh, I can't believe you took my kid out, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's so hard to balance that out. Now with school ball, now we have the concern of where it's not, well, they'll just go play someplace else. It's they just won't play. And that's a real thing. I mean, our numbers are at the point where it's very, very tough to enforce. But I agree that you have to enforce those types when you have those types of rules. I can tell you on our team, we're never going to have the best record. But at JV, I don't think that's your goal. Your goal is to get as many kids prepared for the next level as possible. To the point of what you were talking about before, we wind up getting very few kids back the next year, not because they don't play, but because our school system is so small. Our varsity has such a huge number of 10th graders on it because they were our 9th graders last year. We only got back one 10th grader this year and three 9th graders, I think. Wow. Four 9th graders returning. That, wow. That's it. So yeah, so we're in the same boat where a lot of times we don't get the kids for the second year. Basically, we joke around that we get them ready for varsity, and then the varsity coach doesn't have as many of those types of issues, which I'm sure your program is the same thing.
Absolutely.
And the varsity coach gets all the glory, and that's the nature of the beast. This is our lot in life. This is what we've chosen to do at this level. So be
right. But I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing, my former JV players on the varsity team, and I'm watching, like our varsity team this year is doing fantastic. I think they've lost only one game there, 8-1 or 9-1. They're doing fantastic. And I look and I a certain amount of pride in that where I say, hey, those guys cut their teeth with me and look at what they're doing now. That's the joy I get at, not necessarily what am I doing right now. But one of the things that I wanted to get at, you had mentioned before about the kids and sitting them. Okay. So I'm dealing with something like that right now. And, maybe it's a good thing to bring out so people could see, or at least see how I handle it anyway. So I have a player on my team. He's one of my better pitchers, but he's a work in progress. He's probably about 6'3" and throws the ball real hard. There's a lot of mechanical issues that we're trying to work through with him because I'm trying to get him ready for varsity for next year. And he plays another sport. So here we go with what you were saying about kids not showing up. There's been three instances where he went to that other sport instead of coming to baseball. So my rule and the varsity coach's rule is if you're not there, then there's consequences. So he hasn't really played. I think I can't remember the last time I had him in a game. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, maybe even longer. So this is a snowball effect. And I spoke to the varsity coach about this the other day that, because he's going to that other sport, I'm sitting him. And he's not playing. So then the mindset must be, well, why am I going to baseball? I'm not playing anyway. I might as well go to the other sport. And we're losing all of this time to develop this player to prepare him for next year. But you know what? I can't go against the rules. The rules are the rules.
Right. Because once you start making the exception for the one, then how is that fair to the other kids that are there every day and are putting in their time and are, you know, are trying to better themselves? So it's again, it's another one of those thankless jobs as a coach that you have to make those kinds of decisions. And you're right, whatever decision you make, and you're wrong, whatever decision you make, depending on the perspective of the people that you're talking to at the time.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, but again, I can't be a hypocrite. In other words, right. if I'm going to hold you accountable because you didn't run hard down the first base, I certainly am going to hold you accountable if you miss a practice or you miss a game or whatever the case is. I mean,
right. Well, yeah, Johnny didn't, it's not, it, Johnny always runs hard to first base. He's just never here. So yeah, he always, you know, he's always trying 100%. Well, yes, but he's only here 60% of the time. So yeah, right. It's kind of hard to have that argument. Now, have you had any issues from the kid or the parent, of this kid? Cause that would be the next step, of course. Would that's where we would be anticipating something like that, which again, very easy to justify from your standpoint, but that doesn't mean that logic is going to rule the day from the parent's perspective.
Right. And you're 100% right. The kid, I've sat him down twice already and talked to him about it. He understands, but from what he's telling me, he's not really making that decision where he's going. He's being told you have to go here or there. So my heart really goes out to the kid. It really does. He's a great kid. And that's the other thing. I almost wish that he was a rotten kid where I could look at it, you know, like, God, this kid is a problem anyway. He's a great kid, and I want to be able to help him, and I want to see him succeed. But he's in a bad spot, and man, I feel terrible for him. The parents have not approached me.
Yeah, there was something similar to that I saw. I know we reference it all the time on the Facebook page, the Youth Baseball Coaching Facebook page. There was a question one of the newer coaches had put out there where he's got a kid who somewhat of a similar situation, you know, great kid. He really, you know, likes the kid has talent, but he misses a lot. And it's the parents, you know, it's not that the kid doesn't want to come. It's that the parents can't get him there. And is it fair to punish the kid because of what the parents do and blah, blah, blah. And like, okay, well, keeping in mind, we have a finite number of positions on the field and a finite number of innings to play. So is it, if you're looking at it, that it's a punishment thing, which I don't, but if you're looking at it, and that maybe is part of the problem. We look at it right from the get-go as, you know, sitting the kid is a punishment. No, playing is a privilege.
Yes.
Sitting isn't a punishment. Playing is a privilege. So has he earned the privilege? Well, it's not his fault. Okay. Well, is it, it's not Johnny's fault that he's not there because the parents can't get him there or decided not to get him there or whatever. Okay. But is it, you know, Sally's fault that she does go every day and she does work it, and now you're going to take her out of the game to put the other kid in the game? And that's something where, we've already had on my team, you know, we've already had a couple of discussions. This is just kind of jumping topics a little bit, but still in the same vein. We've had a couple of discussions with kids either just making a comment or in one case actually reaching out to the coach about, you know, I believe I should have more playing time. I don't understand why I'm not getting the playing time. And I'm open to that, you know, and my head coach is open to that conversation, as long as it's done in a respectful and rational way. But it's a matter of what everybody seems to forget is that, again, finite number of positions, finite number of innings. So for you to play, that means somebody else is not playing at that time. So, and my thought process, and I, you know, again, not being the head coach, I don't get faced with this. So this is something a little easier said than done, but my thought process in terms of an answer is, I don't want you to give me a name, but you need to think about who you want to come off the field in order for you to get on the field. You know, and I think that's a different perspective that they don't parents and kids generally don't think about it. There might be saying, oh, I don't know why that kid's getting so much playing time, blah, blah, blah. But generally, it's not even about that other kid. It's just about my kid or just about me, and not understanding the really the team concept, how much of, and it's been said a million times, I think baseball is the teamiest of team sports, where the one superstar means nothing, means absolutely nothing.
Right.
So, yeah. Just that perspective of like, okay, who do you think should be playing less so that you can play more? And, you know, and you got to take an honest look, you know, who has worked who's worked less hard at practice, who's shown up less, who's got less talent, all those things go into it. You know, which person or people are you putting yourself ahead of?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that we talked about a little bit. I believe it was on the last show about the parents being an evaluator of their particular player. And, you know, it's very hard for them to be objective. It's their kid. They're going to think that their kid is the best, but they don't see what's happening at practice. They don't see the reasons why you're doing what you're doing, because let's face it, I'm not doing anything as a coach because I want to hurt a kid. I'm not saying, you know, wow, this kid, he hits, he fields, he pitches, he's this. Hey, you know what? I don't like that kid. I'm going to sit him on a bench. Well, unless there's some type of attitude problem, no, that's not going to happen.
Right. The mouth. If the mouth is an issue, that's different. And that would probably, you know, that should correct itself with a simple, you know what, you're going to talk to me that way. You're on the bench. Let's see how tomorrow goes. And hopefully they learn. But that wouldn't be an ongoing thing of this kid's not getting, or this kid's only getting in the sixth inning or the seventh inning, you know, two games in a row or whatever. It's not because I don't like the kid. There's been plenty, and I'm sure you've been, there's been plenty of times where I've not liked one of the best or the best kid on the team, but he's earned his spot because he is there all the time and he does work his ass off and whatnot. And it doesn't have the best attitude or whatever, but it's not, oh, I'm not playing that kid because coach doesn't like me, is just the easiest childish default mode for somebody to go into. And again, if you broach that subject with the coach should be able to give you the list of reasons why this person's here versus the other kid.
Yeah. And that's something that I can say, that if anyone, you know, ever did approach me in that respect, yeah, believe me, I have a lot of ammunition. I don't make my decisions for no reason. There's always a reason. And see, the other thing too, is that a lot of parents don't see is, and I seem to use this example all the time, but it's fitting. So kid hits a routine ground ball to second base. He runs halfway down the line, turns around and goes back into the dugout. All right. Parent looks at it like, oh, what's the big deal? It was an out. So what? You know, well, as a coach, you know, I don't look at it that way. I want you going 150% down that line through the bag. And you know what? I'll pat you right on the back and say, great hustle. Good job, buddy. Okay. As opposed to giving up on the play, but the parent sees it as, oh, what's the big deal? He was out anyway.
Exactly. And I'll go one step further. Something you already mentioned that I don't think gets enough attention. I don't see people talking about it and parents never bring it up, is what happens at practice, because they don't see it. You know, when they were in Little League, yeah, most of the time, I know most parents or a lot of parents will sit and watch practices as well. Or, you know, nowadays because of the phones and whatnot, maybe half watch, but at least they're there and they can hear stuff. But when you don't see any of that, you know, it takes, that's 90% of the time that we're together until, you know, now, like I said, now we're playing 3-4 times a week. So now it's off, but you've got for the first month that you're together, that's all you've got to go off of. That's and right. You can only say so many times to the kids, hey, nobody walks anywhere. You know, let's go. When we're warming up, why is the ball hitting the ground? You know, like that type of thing. Like if you're not taking basic warmups seriously of just, you know, you're standing 30 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet away from your partner and you can't hit him in the chest and you think that you should be starting, someone else on the field, you know, and that's, and we hammer that stuff down all the time to the point where I think it becomes a little white noise to the kids and they're not. So when, you know, if mom and dad is like, yeah, I don't, you know, has the coach said anything as to why you're not playing? No, I don't know why I'm not playing. Well, we've told you 50 times. Maybe I didn't tell you as we're making the lineup and I got down to the ninth, you know, after the ninth spot on the lineup and then said, you know, the guys who aren't in, you're going to go to this position for warmups or whatever. You know, no, I didn't say, oh, and Jimmy, by the way, you're not playing because of, you know, you were dragging ass the other day at practice. No.
Right.
But at practice, I certainly said, hey, let's go double time. Let's go.
Yeah. You
know, and it's just, it's a constant. So I think, you know, and not that I want to open up practices to parents, there's no reason for them to be there. I think a lot of it comes down to do coaches get the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing, or is the initial thought, clearly this guy doesn't know what he's doing because my, you know, shining star, darling little boy is not the starting shortstop.
Right. So the coach is an idiot. But even to your point, what you just said, you know, if a kid is not in the lineup, I have no problem. Matter of fact, I would love it if a player came up to me and said, hey, coach, how come I'm not in the lineup? I would have no problem telling him. And also, when, let's face it, on the team, there's, you know, you're 11, 12 kids that are your go-to players. If I take one out of the lineup or I move one to a different spot in the lineup, they're going to know why. I want them to know why. Hey, listen, you know, I didn't like the way this went, or I think we need to work on this a little bit more. So I'm going to take a little pressure off you. I'm going to move you from the 3-hole to the 8-hole.
We just did that with our last game. A player that we were sure was going to be almost never going to be able to sit him because of the strength of the player. You know, he was our number 4 hitter or number 5 hitter to start the season. And I believe he's 0-for the season at this point. And we moved him down to the 8 spot. The head coach moved him down to the 8 spot. 8 spot, I was fully in agreement with it. Kid didn't really react any different to being in that spot. So it was only one game. And that's the other thing. Everybody has to remember that there's short seasons in terms of how many weeks we have, right? We only have 7 weeks or 8 weeks of a season, but it's a long season in terms of the number of games that are played. And, you know, I mean, I think he got his first email about playing time. I think we had only played 3 games at that point. Like I said, now it had been 2.5 weeks because of our circumstances with the weather and all these games getting canceled and moved. But it had only been 3. The most it could have been was 4 games. But I'm going to say it was 3 games. It was 3 games. You know, I don't understand why I'm not getting more playing time. And it's something where, again, it's okay. First of all, keep in mind, you know, we're a very young team, blah, you know, whatever. I don't want to rehash the whole thing, but that's the other thing is let's let some things play out a little bit. Sure. Okay. And let's see what happens, because as we go into that opening day and we think we're going to put our best lineup out there, what we feel is our best lineup based off what we see. And it often changes sometimes very quickly. Players step up and do things that you didn't expect them to do in a good way. And you got kids that struggle that, you know, just, hey, this is not helping us any. Now, looking in practice, I don't know that I have a better option, but I have to try. I have to try something. Again, you know, the whole, you know, definition of insanity, doing the same thing, expecting a different result. So, you know what? Maybe, I'm not seeing anything in this kid that is anything special that I think he's going to grab that brass ring and really run with it. But I have to give the opportunity because the one that's there is not. So right. We don't have, you know, other than age, sometimes we don't have the defense of, well, here's why I can't put you in more, because the person that's, oh, wait, the kid that's in front of you made 3 errors and jogged his way down the first and, you know, didn't go hard after that ground ball. Oh, yeah, no. Okay. Yeah. Hey, here we go. Here's your shot. Yeah. Let's see what you do.
Here's your shot. Yep. And it's probably a subject that's been going on from the inception of baseball about playing time and who's, but you know what, when it comes down to it, control what you can control. And we talk about this all the time, run hard, stay engaged, don't miss signs. You know, all of those things will keep you in the game.
Yeah.
I had a kid,
we had this, and I don't want to just call attention to him, but this is, you know, this kid keeps putting more and more, I hate to say it, but I'm going to use this, you know, nails in the coffin in terms of him being a bona fide starter. He forgot to tag up in our game yesterday. Fly ball to pretty deep right center. He's on third base and coach goes to tell him to go and he's got to get back to the base because he had stepped 3 feet off. And it wasn't like he was halfway down the line. He was like 3 feet off the base. So he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't running because he thought it was going to fall and he didn't get right back to the bag immediately. And on the one hand you go, okay, well, you know, they're young, blah, blah. Okay. Kid's been playing competitive ball for 6 years, 7 years at this age.
Yep.
You know, we're in JV. Yeah. You can't have a mental lapse like that. That cost us a run. We lost 4-1. How much of a difference would it have made? And at the time it was 3-0. It would have made it 3-1. And that inning, we didn't wind up scoring. It was the next inning that we wound up scoring another, you know, it changes the complexion of the game.
It does. You know what, Dave, it doesn't even matter about changing the complexion of the game. It's, you know, and I say this all the time, it's playing the game the right way. Okay. You know, as well as, and I'll be honest with you, I had the same thing happen to me in our last game, which was Friday, same exact thing. Ball was hit to center field, player was not tagging. And after that inning, I don't have to tell you where he went, but that's baseball 101. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning when I said we had to go back to basic rudimentary things because they don't understand that. Yeah, if I'm on that base and even, you know, if the ball does drop in, then you go back, you can run
scoring easy
backwards. Right. You be on the base, be ready to go and think about what has to happen there. He has to make the catch, hit the cutoff. The cutoff has to catch it cleanly and make a throw. Come on. At the JV level, I would say that maybe 50-50 shot. What do you think?
I think you're being generous with 50-50. Yeah. I mean, if it's the slowest kid on your team and the kid in center has a gun and, you know, whatever, yes, then your odds obviously drop a lot. But I think more often than not, and this was a ball, the center fielder had to go back and to his glove side to catch. So he's not in a position to make a good, strong throw. He's got to catch it, stop, turn, fire, no momentum, you know, all that stuff. And then, which again is irrelevant. Bottom line
but
is
no.
You're on third base with less than two outs. You get back on the back, period. Right. That's it.
Right. You know, but I'm going to say no, it's not irrelevant because the player should be reading all of that. He should be reading that with his foot on the base.
Right. Okay, well, but that's what I'm saying. But the core issue, all the rest of that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he was behind the ball and was going to be able to catch it on the run and throwing, you know, his momentum carrying forward to make a good, strong, all that stuff is meaningless if we don't do step one, like you said, back to basics. Yeah, and to have to tell a junior high player, and he's not one of my a JV player. He's not one of my junior high kids.
Right.
Where I said, you know, half our team is junior high kids. He's not one of them. So he's got another year or two on top of most of the rest of the team. It's another nail, just another nail getting hammered in of like, okay, I don't have if somebody says, why is this person playing in front of me? What is my, you know, I'm running out of pros and cons. I'm running out of pros. So
yeah. See, and like I said before about consequences here, you know, he's a starting player. I think that more so with him, he should, in a situation like that, he has to see that consequence and be held accountable for what he just did. Because if you don't, I don't think it really has an impact on a kid. I really don't think that they're going to realize, hey, I better not do that again. Look what happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel that, and I might be in a little bit different position because I have more players that are at a higher level, but I'm not looking. I can't say it that way. I am looking to win the game. I want to win the game. I'm doing everything to win the game. But damn it, if it's going to be a situation where I need to teach you something so that maybe further down the line, we don't lose a tie game because you didn't tag off a third base, then that's a win for me.
Right. Absolutely. No, it's yeah, there's no consequences, and the consequence can't just be yelling at the kid, because he said that becomes, you know, the kid, obviously he knew he messed up. You know, and we talked to the other coach on, we talked about it after the game. He's like, I'm not going to hammer him down on it. I go, no, it's not about hammering down on it. He knows he messed up. Okay. But it is a matter of what is the consequence? What is the reaction to it? And if the reaction is just patting him on the head and saying, hey, it's okay, then that's an issue. So, you just can't be in that position.
Right. But what you just said is, you know, about getting on him for that. I'll be honest with you. That's a situation where I always look at it. No, I don't want to get on him. No way. I'm not going to browbeat him for that. No. And it was a bad mistake. That's a situation where I walk over to him and I put my arm around him and I say to him, okay, listen, this is what happened. Do you understand the severity of it? Do you know, if you have any questions, let's talk about it. But you're going to sit for a while and think about that. I'm not upset with you. I'm trying to teach you something here. And that's my approach, is I'm not going to jump on you and yell at you. If you don't run hard down the first base, we'll go back to that example. Yes, I'm going to jump all over you. Right. But if it's something that maybe you were never taught, whatever the situation is, I feel that this is something that maybe the kid just didn't know. So let's help him. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So anyway, we could go on about this forever, I think.
Yeah. So welcome to Angry Old Men Bitching About Baseball today. So speaking of that, so let's get into another topic that is hot and heavy. This is not baseball specific. Obviously, we talk about 99% baseball here, but it is just, again, kind of a societal issue. And it's interesting how a lot of these societal issues bleed over, direct effect in our sport that we quote unquote love, question mark, so much. umpire issues. And when we say umpire issues, we don't mean bad calls, and we don't mean umpires not knowing the rules, although there's some of that certainly that's going on. We're talking about treatment of umpires, the inherent lack of respect that in general that umpires seem to be getting across the country. And this could also be refs from basketball or football or hockey or, you know, what have you. But I guess officials, we'll call it the officiating of the games. And we forget that they're games, because there's only games, not life and death. They're games. Right. I don't know if I can stress that enough.
There's not $1 million on the line here.
Now, there have been, and it's seemingly worse than previous years, although that could just be the awareness of it and the ubiquitousness of, that's a big word, of people, I may have just made it up to the ending of it, people filming, constantly filming from their phones. So we've seen a number of really, really horrible examples of not verbal abuse. I think the verbal abuse we've seen enough of through the years. I know I've seen some of it. You've seen some of it. Fortunately, I've never seen any physical abuse. I don't know if you've seen any live and in person. We'll talk about that. But we've been seeing all these videos coming out. There's a Facebook page kind of dedicated to this type of thing. It's just called Offside. And it's something that you and I have talked about privately before. I don't think it's ever been a topic on the show. It's rampant at this point. It seems to be, I'm not going to use the pandemic word. It seems to be rampant these days, and we need to talk about it, what's creating it, and what are the solutions to getting away from it?
First of all, I'm going to say that I don't even remember when it was. It was probably about 3 years ago that I wrote an article for Inside Pitch Magazine, And the title of the article is called Respect the Umpires. They have feelings too. And the only reason why I'm bringing it up is not to pat myself on the back that I have an article that's published out there. I brought it up just to let our listeners know that that's how much the situation with umpires bothers me. I have one word that I believe encompasses everything that's going on, and it's simply disgusting. I don't understand what the reason is for this. I don't know. I've been dying for somebody to tell me, what do you really think, that you lost that game because the umpire was bad? I mean, is that what this is about? I don't even know what it's about, Dave.
Well, and that's part of the thing, is it goes so far beyond the win and the win and the loss. It's just the gut animal reaction that we see from some of these parents and now players, because it seems to be, it's kind of what we were just talking about in terms of consequences before, where, consequences run both directions, positive and negative, where when the players see the parents doing it, if it's okay for them to do it, then it's okay for me to do it, because we can't be in this do as I say, not as I do situation that, that's what we grew up with. Right. I mean, that was in our households, that's certainly the way that things grew up, whether it be from, drinking, smoking, cursing, whatever. It was always a do as I say, not as I do situation. Exactly. Going to school, wanting to go to college and things like that. I mean, different generations, but when you see these videos of these parents going and all these and people not jumping in and trying to stop it, that's allowing it to go on. I got to believe overwhelming majority of people have seen some of these examples that we've seen. You can see these videos of these umpires walking away with their heads bandaged up because they were attacked by somebody. There was the you want to talk a little bit about the female softball umpire. I know you had pointed that article out to me. You want to talk a little bit about that? That might be one of the worst situations that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, here's a woman who's trying to help her local league or whatever it was. As a matter of fact, I believe that she's even one of the administrators of the umpire association. She's calling a game. She's a little peanut. She's 5'4". And whatever the case was, she's leaving the game. Somebody didn't like what happened, and they came up from behind her, didn't even confront her, face to face, came up behind and hit her and gave her a black eye like you can't imagine, which is disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, we're physically, we've gone from, oh, that was a terrible call, to you're her horrible person, to I need to physically beat on you. Like, that's kind of the trajectory that we've been on, right? I mean, there's always been complaints about bad calls. Ah, you missed that one. Oh, come on. How could you do that? Blah, blah, blah. And then it became, hurling personal insults. I saw it at a minor league, a professional minor league game at our local Renegade Stadium, where a guy beat red. He was screaming at this umpire about what an a-hole the guy was and just going on. Meanwhile, there were two little kids sitting right next to the guy. They weren't his kids. I don't think it was somebody else, because they were cowering over towards mom, because this guy was, spit flying out of his mouth. You could see the direction that this was going. And now we're getting into, you have wronged me so bad, or wronged my kid, which I guess wrongs me so badly, that I need to physically attack.
Yeah.
And there's people getting sent to the hospital. And, there was another one recently, was from a basketball tournament, where, the players kids started attacking the players started attacking the referee. And the coaches, instead of trying to stop it, were basically joining in and encouraging it and going, how are we supposed to get along? Now complain that there's no good. Go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second on that one because you just hit a nerve. Okay. They were eighth grade boys in a basketball game in a church is where they were playing the game. It was a whatever, church, school, gymnasium. All right. I'm sorry, Dave. I cut you off because I thought that that was important to say that how ridiculous this is, that even in a church setting, nobody has any common sense to have some decency.
No, I don't think that the setting has nothing to do with it because you're thinking that they're thinking. You're thinking that there's any rational thought going on to this. And the people that are going to act this way, to expect that they're going to, if they're going to act this way, to expect that they're going to stop and look around and go, huh, see that stained glass over there? Maybe this is not the play time or place for this. You know, there's no way. There's no way that, you know, with the direction that things are going, that's just not going to happen. You're seeing these people physically attacked for marginally affecting their life.
Right.
And again, kind of a societal thing where everything's a 10, you know, nothing's on a scale of 1 to 10, nothing's a 3 anymore. Everything's a 10. So it's the same thing with us and these videos that we're seeing, the stories that we're reading about people being bloodied up, you know, I mean, being threatened, that's one thing. That's bad. And again, it's escalated to now where it's, I don't know, a couple times a week or at the minimum weekly, we're seeing these videos come out of people physically attacking the official from a sport. And you go, well, where does that come from? Well, if the parents are acting that way, and this is the direction we've gone from, hey, that's a bad call, to physically attacking, you know, the parents physically attacking, what's the next generational? What's the next step on that? Going to the person's house?
Sure.
You know, kind of hunting them down? This is scary. And then, you know, it comes full circle because what started all this was a theoretical bad call.
Right.
Well, what are the better officials going to do when this stuff happens?
Right.
They're going to get the hell out.
Right. And I that was going to bring me to my next thing, but go ahead, finish what you were saying.
No, you know, I'm making $40 for my 2.5 hours on a Saturday, or $70 for my 2.5 hours on a Saturday, with the threat of getting hit. And keep in mind, if you're talking about local leagues, they may know where I live. You know, we live in the same town.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so am I going to keep doing this? You know, well, my oldest friend, one of my best friends to date, he's one of the assigners for our local umpire leagues. And it's been years that their population is shrinking every year because people don't want to put up with this stuff. It's just not worth it. Yes. Most of them, if they can umpire 4 or 5 games a week or whatever, they're making a decent amount. They're making a couple extra $1,000 a year, but most of them that's not the driving force behind doing it. It's that they want to do something where they're still involved. They're too old to play. Their elbow shot, you know, whatever the case may be, but they're able to stay around. Their kids are grown. So they're not going, you know, they're not going and watching Little League games anymore. So this is a way for them to keep touch with it and still be involved and give something back.
Right.
But there's a limit to what, you know, what you'll put yourself through to be able to do that. And we've crossed that line.
Yeah. Well, you just said it. The number one reason officials stop refereeing, umpiring, whatever, is verbal abuse from parents, fans, and verbal abuse from coaches. But the reason why they do it, why they're officials, is because what you just said, they love the sport. They want to be part of it. And it's great. I mean, it's great. Yeah. We as baseball coaches and baseball teams, we need these officials. So it has to be a situation where we respect them because we need them and they respect us. And I don't understand why it should be, you know, such a confrontational thing to the point where people are, you know, physically abusing people. I mean, yeah, you want to say, Hey, Blue, you messed up that call. All right, so what? You know, the umpire lets that go in one ear and out the other. That's no big deal. But then sit down and shut up after that. You know, I mean, it's done. You voiced your opinion. What are you going to do? You know, we had a situation last week, the week before, whatever it was. Runner, my runner was on first base. Pitcher comes set. He's in the stretch, and he makes an attempt to pick off and doesn't throw the ball. The umpire doesn't say anything. So I went over and I said, hey. Now, again, I'm not one of those guys that calls the umpire blue. I hate that. Okay, so before the game, I learned his name, and his name was Diego. And I went over and said, hey, Diego. I said, it's a balk. So he goes, yeah. So I said, all right. I said, you're going to call it? He goes, look. He goes, it was my bad. He said, I missed it. He goes, let it go. I said, fair enough. And I went back. Okay. What am I going to do? Argue with him, beat him up, hit him with a bat? That's what he said. He's not going to call it. He missed it. His bad. Okay. I make a ton of mistakes. I'm not perfect. You know, so.
Right.
Why can't other people see it that way, that this is not the end all because he didn't call that balk? You know what? The guy who's up at bat, get a base hit, and then that eliminates any of that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I've always said. The best revenge is to, you know, you don't like, you know, pitcher hits somebody or what. The best revenge for the next guy is hit a shot into the outfield. You know, drill one right back up the middle. You know, if you're listening to this show, then I'm sure that you see these articles out there about it. And I would like to think none of our thousands and thousands of listeners are the ones that are causing these kinds of issues. So then, like most things we talk about, we want to get into, so what, you know, what do we do about it? For those of us that think this is ridiculous and this is an issue, so what can we, as the right thinking people, you know, what can we do about these kinds of situations?
Well, I've heard many, many different suggestions on how to fix this. Everything from, you know, school administrators and athletic directors getting involved, to having policemen at the games, to making any type of assault with an official into a felony, which I don't understand why it's not anyway. I've heard all of these things, but I am a firm believer that the buck stops with me as the head coach. The buck stops with me. All right. And a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this. And I know that. Okay, but I see it this way, and I'm going to give you an example of something that happened again just within the last week or so. One of my players was up at bat. He didn't like the strike call that the umpire called on him. He kind of like, and it wasn't strike three, by the way, it was strike one or strike two. Okay, he flipped the bat up behind him. The bat went on the ground. He put his hands on his hips. He was shaking his head, and then he reached back and grabbed the bat. My first instinct was to pull him right out of the batter's box and put somebody else in. But I said to myself, you know what? Don't embarrass a kid like that. That'll create problems. Let him finish the at-bat. He finished the at-bat, and believe me, he came out of that game immediately. And he came over to me and said, Coach, I want to talk. I said, no, listen. I said, your best thing to do right now is to go sit down. Okay, there's nothing to discuss right now. After the game, you and I will sit down and we'll discuss this. My point is, I believe that what I did in that situation sent a message to every single person that was there, my players, my parents, everyone. And I've had situations, and we've talked about this before, where parents have, you want to see me come out of the dugout like a rhinoceros? Have one of my parents say something to an umpire. I will come out of the dugout like a lunatic. And go over to that parent and say, listen, if I hear another sound out of you, anything towards that umpire, you're gone. So yeah. I don't know if every coach sees it the way that I do, but I'm in charge of that team. This is my culture. This is my responsibility. And if you act like an idiot, you're making me look like an idiot. And I don't like that.
Right. I'll do that myself. Damn it.
Exactly. I'm very good at it.
So, yeah, it starts with the coaches setting you know, kind of setting policy ahead, you know, at the beginning of the schedule, this is what we're going to do. This is our code of conduct policy, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to the individual kids, obviously what the parent, how the parent deals with the kid is more important than what the coach deals with the kid, because we shouldn't be in that position as coaches to have to parent your kid. But okay, now here we are. Now, when we talk about the behavior of the parents, gets a little stickier. And again, this kind of goes, I think this goes back to our original conversation with the whole thing of what coaches are afraid to do when it comes to even playing time, this full circle for this whole show that we're talking about. Now, some of the same things have to come through here. Like, oh, if I try to put this parent in his place, is he going to pull his kid and go to another team and blah, blah, blah. And I get that, you know, I'm sure you could not care any less if the parent did that. Hey, good riddance. Good. Bye. Headache is gone. I think I'd like to think I would be in that same boat. But there's a lot of coaches that for one reason or another can't do that because of the way their program is structured or whatnot. But when it comes to this, yes, we are responsible for the way the entire team behaves. And that includes the parents. We have, something I'm obviously as a coach, I'm not a big fan of is when parents are standing behind the backstop or on the side of the backstop. Obviously that's even tougher. We had a game during the week. We had a terrible umpire. And he's a guy who's, I've known the guy for a decade or more since my kids were little playing ball. He's been a terrible umpire. Then he hasn't gotten any better as he's and he's an older guy. And shockingly that hasn't made his eyesight any better as he's gone even older. And there was a lot of bad calls. There was a lot of bad calls on both teams. And it's one of those things when I see the guy come walking up with his mask in hand before the game and I go, okay, we know what we're in for today. So you know what? And there's no excuse for the parents, for the kids, the parents, the coaches to get on the umpire's case. You want to call time. You want to ask him about a specific call or a non-call like you did. We had a situation with an interference play in our game yesterday where it might have had an impact, a big impact on the game where a kid slid to the side of second base, sliding directly into my second baseman as we were trying to make a double play. And the umpire made the right call and he went out, he called the interference and it was all good, but he didn't runners on second and third. The runner went from the runner on third scored on the ball being hit. We were getting two, so he scored. That's legitimate. Now my second baseman is limping around because he just got spiked in the ankle. The other runner scores. The home plate umpire calls time. He called the runner at first out, which is what he should have done. He called the runner at second, was already out, but he called the runner at first out. He did not put the other runner back to third. And I said something to the head coach, you know, I said that that's a dead ball foul. It's a dead ball when the thing happens. If the kid has already scored, so the first kid, it's a run. The second kid, it's not. He went out, play, sir, may I speak to you? Said to it, and the umpire had to think about it for a second, said, you're absolutely right. Put the runner back on third. Everybody's fine. Now, in the meantime, I've got parents behind me that are starting to yell about, and I just turn around, put my hand up, take it easy. We're dealing with it. Take it easy. Fortunately, our parents quieted right down then.
Most of the time they will.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, again, fortunately we're not, it sounds like you and I right now are not dealing with these types of parents that we're seeing these news articles come out about. Because again, I think we're relying on rational thought and these other people that we're seeing these articles, the woman who runs up after a game and blindside punches a, you know, 5 foot tall woman in the face. That's not a rational thought. So fortunately I don't have any of them as far as I know, not yet, but you know, it's that type of thing. You hear the coach, if the coach hears the parents getting on the umpire and doesn't say anything, again, what we talked about before, consequence. So there's no consequences, then it's going to continue. And when something like that continues by nature, it's going to get worse. It is not going to continue at the same level. It is going to get worse.
Right. So you just said that you and I are not dealing with those lunatic parents that are attacking these umpires. Okay. And I'm going to say, because I believe, well, I know me and I know you well enough to know that we both respect the game. Okay. What about when you get that jackass coach that he's worse than the parents and he's chirping and he's, you know, creating these situations? Is all he is doing is sending a message to his parents that it's okay to act like a moron. Okay. Whereas you or I, the minute it happens, we set the tone. No, we don't do this. Let him do his job and whatever happens, happens. Okay. And I firmly believe that a lot of this comes from the way coaches act. And I'm going to tell you a story, real quick one. I'll try and make it as quick as possible anyway. I believe that that culture has to be set even, and I'm going back to my travel organization. It has to be set in the organization that this will not be tolerated throughout any of our teams. Okay. Years ago, there was a coach that was in a game. I don't remember and I don't care what happened, but it was late in the game and he felt that he was wronged by the umpire. He created a scene, okay, to the point where people followed the umpire out to the parking lot. The umpire happens to be a friend of mine. So I got a phone call from him. This is what happened, da, 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 da. So I called up the coach and Dave, let me tell you something. I lit him up like you can't imagine. And he said to me, he said, I was dreading this call. And I said to him, and again, I'm cleaning up a lot of what I said to him. I said, when I walk around and I have the name of the organization on my chest, on my jersey, and I walk around, people now look at me like I'm an idiot like you. Okay. Because you don't know how to conduct yourself when something like this happens and you just embarrassed me. You embarrassed the whole organization and you embarrassed everybody involved with it. If it happens again, okay, I'm going to go to the higher ups and tell them I want you removed. It wound up that it got to the higher ups and they removed him anyway. But my point is that if you allow people to get away with this, and you, again, it goes back to like what we were saying with the players, there has to be consequences. You cannot let the people act like this. It's disgusting.
Absolutely. Like you said, things do not tend to stay at the same level. They get better or they get worse. Almost everything in life, that's the way it goes. Very rarely do things just stay at the same level. So yes, when people think of the organization, they're not going to go, oh, that 11U team, that was really unruly. They're going to say this organization, they don't know how to act on the field, blah, blah, blah. Because the stories get changed. The old telephone game, the story gets changed where it goes from, you know, it was the 11U, and I'm not even saying it was the 11, but just as, you know, it was the 11U coach. But then when the story gets told the second or third or fifth time, all of a sudden it's the 12U coach. And then all of a sudden it's the owner of the facility or all of a sudden, whatever, you know, the stories, the facts get changed all the time. Again, talk about a societal issue, but we have to cut it off, cut the snake off at the head when it happens, and then we don't have to worry about it. Or not that we don't have to worry about it, because we have to stay vigilant about it. But then at least you're addressing it up front. That should cause a downward spike in that behavior until it happens again. And then you cut it off and there's another downward spike. But if you don't do anything, then it's okay. If you don't address it, then it's okay. And that's whether it's with your kids or your dog or, you know, parents at the field, whatever. If you don't try to correct poor behavior or address poor behavior, you're saying it's okay. And it's going to continue to get worse. I firmly believe that.
And how many times have I said it? And you even said that you love this. You are what you allow. Very simple. That's what you are. Absolutely. If you allow it, that's what you are. Okay. Right. And there's a footnote too, that I want everybody to hear with that incident with one of our coaches. I, if I remember correctly, it was a Sunday that the incident happened and I called him on that Monday. Okay. I said to him, and again, I'm cleaning up what I said because I was pissed, right? I said to him, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, it's Monday morning. Your game was yesterday, Sunday. Did the outcome of that game change? It's Monday morning. Did you win that game? So he goes, well, no. He said, we lost it. I said, so then tell me, what was the purpose? What was the purpose? Did you think that because you acted like a jerk, that the umpires would say, you know what? Your team wins. I'm sorry. I was wrong. The other team loses. You know, think about how dumb that is.
Right. Right. And it's one thing to, and it's, and again, it, it's not saying that you can't ever say something to an umpire. No. You can have a converse, you can have a conversation with the umpire. Hey, you're wrong. Here's what, here's the way this should have gone. I, you know, whatever, but you, but to go like a lunatic at somebody, like you said, to what end? And this is something I say all the time. I say it at work. I say it with my kids. I say it all the time is like, what is the end result you're hoping for here? Because unless it's, I sure hope I look like a jackass. That's the only thing you've accomplished.
Yeah.
And yes. Most people probably don't go into it with that as their idea. I want to look as stupid as humanly possible. Here's what I'm going to do. Okay. Yeah. That's what you did. Does anybody feel better about it because you did that?
Right.
You know, and he didn't even feel better about it. Right. Afterwards, he didn't feel better about it.
No, he kept apologizing. And I mean, I can be obstinate. I told him, I said, your apologies are, they're hollow. I don't want to hear it. You know, you're sorry now because you saw what happened. But if the result wasn't what it was, you would have justified what you did. And there's no justification for it. I've had countless discussions with umpires, umpires that have made bad calls, wrong calls, everything under the sun. I've never been thrown out of a game. I shouldn't say I've never. I'm sure there were times where I had heated arguments, but I can't remember them. Most of the time it's, hey, you know, listen, what happened there? Well, you know, I saw it this way. And then I may say, well, listen, this is the way it really is. And, you know, oh, sorry, coach. Okay, good. Let's go. I'm done. What am I going to do? I'm going to beat you up. I mean, that's what everybody seems to think, that maybe this is grounds for beating somebody up. It's stupid.
Right. And I don't know about your league. I know in our league, the head coach can do a report for the game, for every game, in terms of the umpiring. And so if you feel like your umpire was that bad and you can put in, you know, so you can point out specific issues, especially if it's a rules thing, like you were talking about with the balk before, with us, with the interference, and, you know, is it dead ball, and, you know, should that run have scored? You know, if they're wrong on something like that, that's, you know, that's primarily what I think these umpire agencies are looking for feedback on, so they know what they need to coach on. You know, and then the other side of that argument would be, okay, so you put in a complaint, like I talked about this other umpire who I know he's a terrible home plate umpire, and yet he's still there. Well, guess what? There's not somebody sitting there waiting to replace him.
Right.
Because they don't want to get in, because they don't want to get involved in this.
The numbers are sickening. I've read stories where there are high school games that are having to be canceled because they don't have enough umpires.
Yep.
My league, the Catholic High School Athletic Association in New York, JV level, we only have one umpire. Now, I don't know if that's by design. Maybe it is, but we only get one umpire. And I go into the game knowing that their plays at second base, he's not going to be able to see. There are going to be many things that he's not going to be able to see. Whatever he calls, there's nothing I could do about it. I'm not going to, you know, have an argument with him. It's the way he saw it. It's not his fault.
Right. We had one of our games, one of our early games. Well, again, we've only had a handful of games, but one of our games, home plate umpire didn't show up. The field ump was there. He didn't have his home plate gear with him, so he couldn't go behind the plate. So he had to call the whole game from behind second base. So fair and foul calls, we knew it's going to be a roll of the dice, you know, and what are you going to do? You're going to attack the guy because he doesn't have the angle on it, that he physically can't have an angle on it to see the right thing. It's just, you know,
hit a bunch of doubles in the gap and those calls don't matter.
Right. Well, but yeah, I mean, it's just, and now I feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse. So I wrote down a couple things that I thought of, or things that I've read about on some of the Facebook pages that we follow. I've seen things on, you know, we talk about the youth baseball coaching support site all the time. This other one that's out there, this offside, these Facebook pages where the people give ideas and suggestions and whatnot. So came up with a couple of things. You know, I mean, obviously, so one of the first things everybody says is, oh, there needs to be security at every game, whether it's a, you know, private security guard or police or whatever. That, yeah, that'll work to a degree, but it's also going to be a lot of after the fact. Okay, so that person maybe gets arrested. And, you know, is that a deterrent For some people, yes. For some people, I would argue no, because again, you'd be counting on rational thought of, oh, I'm not going to attack that umpire because I'm going to get arrested. Well, the person that attacks the umpire is not thinking that, because they're going to get arrested anyway. I can't walk up and punch somebody in the face, whether they called my son out on a bad third pitch or not, or just because they're walking down the street. If I walk up and punch somebody in the face, I do expect to get arrested. So, yes, the presence probably has some deterrent effect there, but I don't know how effective that is. If somebody does get caught elevating a situation like that, if it's a parent, you ban the parent, certainly, for that year. And then you go, okay, well, now how's the kid going to get to and from the game and blah, blah, blah. Well, again, too bad. If you know, unfortunately, parent can drop them off and leave, but they can't be, you know, they can't be there. They just can't. You can't. If you're going to do it once, it's probably not the only time you're going to do it, is the other thing. Like, if it's inherent in you, and again, I'm not talking about yelling out, hey, that was a terrible call. Okay. People do that. And I don't love it, but it is what it is. I'm talking about when we get into these physical, you know, the true verbal assaults, you know, the insults, the true insults being thrown, and then the physical assaults that come out. So you got to ban the parents. Probably going to have to set up something where the coach might get banned if one of their parents does it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I could see that, because the way I feel about it is, I, you know, like I said before, I believe it's the coach's responsibility. So if you're not going to keep them in check, then you're going to take the punishment for it.
Right. So now the parent now go, oh, that's not fair to everybody else. Okay. Too bad. Control yourself.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. One of the things I saw, somebody said that one of the tournament locations, I didn't catch the name of it, they charge a separate security deposit, a sportsmanship security deposit. I don't know. And again, I'm only coaching in the high school at this point. I haven't coached travel in six, seven years now. So you're still involved in that game. I don't know if that's something that's a regular occurrence, or if
I've never run across it.
Okay. So, yeah. So I think that's a good idea. And then people go, well, but what happens to the money? I don't care. I don't care if the facility keeps the money. It's not where the money's going. It's the punitive thing of, if I'm a parent on a coach on a team. So say there's, you know, let's just do some easy math, and that it's probably not this high, but let's say it's there's 15 kids on the team, and it's a $750 security deposit for sportsmanship. That's $50 a parent. Okay. That's $50 a kid. If I lost my $50 because you were a jackass, I don't care where that money's going. I care that I lost that $50. Exactly. I'm the cheapest person in the world. If I lost that $50 because the guy sitting next to me is a jackass, okay, guess what? I'm going to demand him and his kid are removed from the team. And if the facility doesn't want to do it, I'm pulling my kid off. That's just, you know, that's it. We can't allow, we have to take some kind of steps to get this type of thing under control. So maybe that's something the leagues can do. It's something a team can do, right?
Right.
Hey, your fee to play travel baseball this year is $1,800. $150 of that is a sportsmanship fee, that if you or your child violates, it's $50 for the first offense. It's a, you know, whatever. It's $75 for the second one. And the third one, it's the other 150 that's left, and you're gone.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, because people do not like to get hit in their pocketbook. That's one thing that hopefully maybe might mean something. So I definitely, that was the first time I had seen that done. And you're saying you haven't run into it, and you've been at a thousand tournaments. So, and you know, one of the things we complain about with travel ball is how much the costs are going up, but this is something I think you have to work, and you'll get the money back. That's the whole thing. If you're worried about the cost, if you're worried about this adding to the cost, you're part of the problem.
Right.
Because you're afraid you're not going to get that money back. And if you're afraid you're not going to get that money back, we don't need you.
Right. Exactly. Well, a few years ago, we had a situation, and it wasn't with an umpire. It was parent to parent. Okay. So just thinking out loud here that this might be another solution, okay, for, let's say, a parent does get into it with an umpire. So whatever, I had two parents that got into it a little bit. So when the game was over, I went over to another parent. I said, get all of the parents. And there was like a little gazebo off to the side in the complex where we were. I said, get everybody in the gazebo. All right. Game ended. I said to the boys, I pointed them in a different direction. And I said, you guys go over there, relax, have something to drink, sit in the shade under the tree, whatever it was, far, really far away from the parents. Went over to the parents and I lost my mind. I lost my mind. I said, I have X amount of kids in that dugout. I said, and I love every single one of those kids. They're great kids. They get along. They have fun together. We're enjoying ourselves. I said, and I got to worry about you. I got to worry about you guys fighting amongst yourselves like children. I went off the wall and I said, all right, listen, that's it. I said my piece. This is what we're going to do. If it happens again, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to pull up to the field. You're going to drop your kid off and you're going to get back in your car. I said, I'm going to treat you like a 4-year-old if I have to. Okay, but you're not going to come on the field and have, you know, in this case, it was parents. I was steaming. And I said to him, and let me tell you something. I said, if you think that I'm stupid and I'm not watching, if you get out of your car and you come over and start, you know, sit in the stands and try and watch the game, I'm going to go out to the umpire. I'm going to forfeit the game and we're going to leave. I'm going to give you a son and you're going to go home. And believe me, it stopped. Right. So, again, this is where I believe that you are what you allow. Okay. If you don't, as a coach or a, you know, league director or a, you know, organization director or whatever, if you don't set that kind of tone so that they understand, I mean, I'm sure that when they walked, they said, he's not playing with us. We either do what we have to do, or there's going to be, there's that word again, consequences. There has to be. We can't keep going like this, Dave. We're not going to have umpires anymore.
No. I mean, there's enough things we've been talking about, especially in the last couple of shows, more and more, with like Rick Wolf and Kevin Gallagher and Jeff Fry, about how the sport has been shrinking. You know, the sport is dying and all this stuff. Well, here's again another nail in the coffin. Is if we can't have officials, then what, each coach is going to go out and umpire two innings,
right? And then they'll beat the coach up.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, it's not working. Again, definition of insanity, doing the same thing, expecting this, what we're doing is not working. So we're going to take some steps. Now, sometimes plans get put into place that are too drastic, but I'd rather the pendulum swing a little too far than it not swing at all.
Right.
Okay. And then we can get back to some normalcy, right? But it's going to get to the point where parents are going to get banned from games.
Right.
Well, I don't mean individual. I don't mean individual parents. I mean parents.
Parents in general. Yes.
Spectators. Yeah. You know, you look at like the last 2 years. You know, before, or the last year during COVID, if you know, some of these basketball games and things like that, where there was no spectators allowed in the arenas, in the high school gyms, there's pretty much zero incidences of referees getting attacked.
Yep.
So yeah, now that they're back and they're coming out like caged animals, guess what? Might need to go back to that. And that would kill me. You know,
so
I would just say, you know, I only ever missed one of my kids' games because I was at the other kid's game.
Yeah.
You know, so to be told, I couldn't imagine what it would have been last, not so much this year. I think there was a little bit of it this year, but last year, especially where, you know, there was just no spectators allowed it. I couldn't imagine. I feel so bad for the parents with that. Well, let's not go and ruin that by then taking it away from ourselves.
Right. Yeah. Well, how about this one? And I just thought about this while you were just talking. Okay. And I know it's not feasible, but I kind of like it. Have a registry of all of these people that act like morons. Have a registry. When you're short on umpires, they have to come, you know, they'll be able to come back and watch the games again. If you bring them in, put the gear on them and let them go out and umpire the game. Okay. And that'll get you back in. Keep that registry and let them. I mean, again, I know it's not feasible. It's, but think about that for a minute. Put that idiot that's screaming at an umpire out there and let him call the game.
Right. Let me see. Let's see it from the other perspective. Let's see if your attitude towards the officials changes any when you're, you know, when you're trying to decide if an 80 mile an hour pitch cut the corner of the plate or didn't cut the corner of the plate. Let me see you make the decision. Did that kid swing or did he not swing on that third strike where he, you know, he check swung. That was our game ended on that yesterday, you know, and I coach first. So a right-handed batter, I've got a pretty good view from there. I certainly have a better view of the home plate umpire. And so of course the head coach came up and players came up to me after the game. That, that was our third out and we lost the game. Did I think he went? Yes. You know why? Because the umpire said so.
That's right.
If I'm the umpire, do I think he went? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I saw it live. I could not have been any more focused. I could not have been any more focused. I wasn't trying to, I wasn't worrying about having to decide whether the pitch was a ball or a strike. All I was watching was whether, you know, watching my, my player's mechanics and whether or not he hit the ball. So I was dead focused on it. You know what?
Right.
I'm not sure. It was pretty damn close. I can tell you that. It was not slam dunk. Absolutely no. So if it's not a slam dunk, absolutely no. Now, as an umpire, would I have ended the game on that? No. but I can't argue. I can't go. You're crazy. You're crazy for calling that. No.
Right.
You know, he check swung. Did the bat break the plane? And, you know, all the people that are complaining, do you know what the rule is? Do you know what the, you know, do you know where that line is? Because I can tell you it wasn't that, I mean, I guess it was a long time ago now, but you know, it happened to me as a batter where I didn't think I went.
Right.
And I turned, and I'm not talking about as a 12-year-old. I'm talking about when I was 24, I think I can remember a very specific instance where as a batter, I actually said, again, we're, it's an adult league. These aren't kids. So, you know, I mean, I guess I was still a kid. I was 24 or so, but you know, and I just went, ah, oh, come on. And I walked away. That was the extent of it. And thing was, because I'd been playing in the league for a while, and it was one of those leagues where you had, you know, only a small pool of umpires. So the umpire knew who I was, and I caught some. So he definitely knew. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, did you really not think that was a strike? In such a way, like really, really questioning himself because he knew what kind of player I was. And I never argued balls and strikes with him and whatnot as a catcher. And I forget what the guy's name was now. And I just went, oh, I have no idea. I'm up at plate. I check swung. You think I know exactly where my hand stopped? I have absolutely no idea. And he just started laughing and went back behind the plate. And I'm like, how the hell would I know?
Yeah, right. How do I know? Yeah. So, and you know, Dave, we could beat this to death. My only solution, because I heard many people talk about this, that, or the other thing, it always comes in my mind, it always comes back to the coaches. If the coaches don't allow it, then it won't happen. I think it's that simple. I know it's hard to do because I know a lot of coaches don't think the way you and I do, but I think that that's where it has to be. Period. The end.
Absolutely. And it's the accountability. We've said the word 500 times during the show. I mean, if there's no accountability, then you're encouraging it to keep going. So,
yeah.
So I agree. It's an important topic, and you know, you wanted to get to it because we've already been, you know, it's early in the season yet, whether it's major leagues or it's high school ball or rec ball, we're seeing these videos come out of all these, you know, horrible, horrible calls being made by the umpires and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so something, I don't know, maybe we can do some good. Maybe some of these things can get implemented. And it'll help to start cutting down on these things. Maybe more coaches will kind of pay attention to what their fans and parents are doing, and they'll take responsibility. Okay. Sorry. Again, thankless task being a coach, but we're more than coaches. We're coaches, we're teachers, we're mentors, we're leaders. So we got to lead by example. And if we're not willing to address the issue ourselves, then we're encouraging it to keep going. So that'll about wrap it up for us for this week. We appreciate everybody jumping on and listening and rate, review. My dog is very excited about this week's show, as you can hear. So we appreciate you guys. Continue to review the show on Apple, Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to us. We appreciate it. Reach out to us on Facebook. Each of us is there individually. Email is clearingthebases@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @theCTB Show. Thank you, everybody. Always remember the two things, and this week's show is definitely a big part of this. The two things that we can control in life is our effort and our attitude, whether it be the players or the parents or the coaches, positive mental attitude at all times, 100% effort. Good things are going to follow. Final words, coach.
So before we end this, I had mentioned earlier about the magazine article I had written for Inside Pitch. And one of the things I said, actually, it was the very last thing I said in the article, and I think it's something that I should bring out to everyone listening, is that umpires at the youth level and through high school are usually friends and neighbors from our own and neighboring communities. Little League, middle schools, high schools, travel organizations, and tournament directors need to partner up with them to promote sportsmanship amongst all participants. They are part of the process. They are not the enemy. So the next time you run into an umpire, shake their hand, thank them for supporting the game and making it possible for us to enjoy the greatest game on the face of the earth. And those words I believe wholeheartedly. So as usual, I will leave you with, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one.